we're people that really think from a big picture perspective, from a systems perspective, and we look at the big picture and we understand the whole is greater than the sum of all the parts. I think it's just a natural thing for folks like us to connect each other, connect opportunities, connect projects, connect things that are relevant to help people move to their next step of success, whether that's an entrepreneur, whether it's a professional in their career, whether it's mentoring of a child. It's just naturally wanting to help and support and being out there and being open to those serendipitous messages that are coming at you. But it's systems thinkers really coming together and working towards helping others be more successful.
Hi, I'm Jacob Dolans.
And I'm Lauren Mathena, and this is the Rise Collaborative Podcast.
This is a podcast for dreamers, doers, and innovators in rural America. We believe entrepreneurship and innovation are key to leveraging our existing strengths to revitalize local economies and provide more opportunities for all people.
If you've ever wanted to go behind the scenes and learn how to spark innovation and build ecosystems, this is the podcast for you.
Through conversations with some incredible experts, we will guide you in leading the change you want to see in your regional economy.
As ecosystem builders in rural Southern Virginia, we're learning as we go, and we invite you to come along with us. So today we have Beth Zimmer as our featured guest. She is an ecosystem builder leader known across the country and across the world. And we're so excited that she has taken time today to tell us her story and help us learn how to be better ecosystem builders. Thank you, Beth.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so really, I just want to capture the same story that you told me on the phone. The work that you've done in Erie, Pennsylvania is just fascinating, as well as some of the other organizations you're involved in. But I think just starting with your story first would be great for our listeners.
So I think, like a lot of us, I stumbled into this work by accident. It comes from a really deep and sometimes unhealthy passion for my community. And I'm a recovering executive recruiter. You know, I had a lot of success in that field. And turns out now that I know what ecosystem building is, I've been ecosystem building throughout my career and my life. But I ended up moving away from the global focus and started serving in the role of lead executive recruiter, for lack of a better term, for our community several years ago. This was probably back in 2008 timeframe. And the more I got involved in my community, the more I fell in love with it. And most importantly, fell in love with its potential and became equally frustrated that for decades, our economy has been sliding with no recovery in sight at the time. And this is probably 2011 timeframe is when I finally got some momentum behind a solution to help our economy for once and for all start becoming healthy again. In my work as the executive recruiter, and I did a lot of business development work, I was able to convince the founder of a very successful angel investment network out of Pittsburgh to expand their operations up into Erie. And my impetus for that was, okay, if our startups can get invested in more quickly and more efficiently, and they'll have access to all these investors' network, it's obvious that our startups are going to succeed much quicker. And that in turn creates more business for everyone, right? But 6 months into, you know, we did all of our legwork and there was enough critical mass of wealth here to launch this network up here in Erie. And after 6 months, I'm witnessing the fact that our high net worth individuals in Erie are getting to invest in some really cool startups, but none of the startups from Erie were making it through the screening process. So that led me to discover that our startup environment or ecosystem is severely underdeveloped. Being the executive recruiter in town, and this Northwest Pennsylvania is pretty small, where our MSA is around 250,000. So there is such thing as one person kind of being that person. So I had a lot of friends. It's kind of like somebody that gives a lot of money away, somebody that has walking around with a perceived bag of jobs. Everybody wants to be your friend, right? Which was awesome. But that in turn gave me access to folks who I knew were the smartest people with the heaviest levels of ethic, best integrity, et cetera, and really, really cared about their community. So I was able to pull those folks together. And they came from all over the spectrum, from entrepreneurs to manufacturing professionals to philanthropists to angel investors, of course, et cetera. We all came around the table and I pitched basically the problem I saw and the proposed, let's get to a solution through researching this more and what's happening across the rest of the country and the globe around startup environments. And at the time, I didn't realize it was a startup ecosystem. But in any case, the whole group became extremely energized around this potential for a solution here. And we met a few more times. Again, this is 2011, 2012. And decided at the time, I was still working in my role as a recruiter, but spending more and more of my time on this project in particular, and decided to resign my position with the boutique human resources firm that I was the recruiter for, just because I wasn't doing that position justice. And I figured if I can come out here and really focus my efforts and energy on this, I can go back to the recruiting field in short order. But it wasn't fair to continue to focus on that and get paid to be doing something else. So I was then serving as the interim volunteer CEO of our regional technology council. So it was a great place for the focus on the project to exist and to continue convening folks around the potential solution. And we were able to apply and receive a very competitive grant from our state of Pennsylvania. Back then, it was called Discovered and Developed in Pennsylvania. And our ask was for $500,000 for 3 years. In 3 years, we wanted to confirm, yes, our ecosystem was severely underdeveloped, and then develop a work plan to solve for that. We were able to fast forward, and we were awarded a grant, but for $100,000, and they wanted to see what we would do with it. So we were required afterwards, if things went as planned, to spin out of a new 501c3 to focus on applying the solutions. So we were able to engage organization out of Cleveland, Ohio, that's called Jumpstart. And they had at the time, this is 2013, 2014, they had at the time been in a lot of different regions across the country. The federal government had approached them and asked them to go in Detroit and fix their issues, et cetera. And, you know, they said, of course, we can't fix their issues, but we can teach them what we were able to do here in Northeast Ohio. So we got the state grant. We were able to hire Jumpstart to come in and alongside us assess the entrepreneurship ecosystem and provide us with a report out on the assessment. But more importantly, if it was severely underdeveloped, as we expected, based on their experiences, provide us with a work plan. What can we do together as a community to solve for this and move our economy forward?
When you say underdeveloped, can you kind of explain or give some examples of what you mean by that?
Underdeveloped would be, you know, one of the most glaring and important issues was, and I think still is, there aren't enough startups in our region to satisfy what would be called typical deal flow. And if you're looking at it from a venture capital or angel investment perspective, to satisfy their appetite, you have to meet certain criteria. And there just weren't enough of those in our community. But when they looked deeper, they found that there just weren't enough people taking it back at all, whether that was a bakery on the corner or a coffee shop or a manufacturer or a high tech, high growth potential startup. So that was one clue that we were underdeveloped. And then it was more, there was no source and no knowledge of any opportunities out there across the community for an entrepreneur to get started and to get help along their journey. Like most communities across the country, there's a small business development center here. We have a state-funded seed funding organization. We have, of course, economic development folks. We have investors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But nobody was telling anyone that these things existed. And for whatever reason, I don't know if in this space that people in that profession that folks just can't spend money on outreach or advertising. So there was that. And most of the organizations that were in existence, at least in part, if not in full, to support entrepreneurs were disparate. They weren't talking on a regular basis and thinking of the system as a whole. They were just thinking about their silo, if you will, and what their marching orders were and what metrics that they needed to meet, whether or not they aligned with what our economic development needs were or not. So that could be federally funded, state funded, regionally funded, or just locally focused organizations. So mostly those things.
And then I heard you say that you were part of the Tech Council when you convened this group. I'm part of the Southern Piedmont Technology Council and have been since I worked for the private sector, and now Mid-Atlantic Broadband and SoBe Innovation Hub are sponsors, and I'm trying to recruit Jacob to join SPTC. I said it on the podcast, so now it definitely has to happen. But
I'll commit on live, well, not live podcast, but I will commit.
I saw those thumbs up.
So could you expand on that, like why you saw the Technology Council as a good fit for a convener of that conversation?
To be truthful, a lot of these things just have happened serendipitously in my career. It was strangely enough, I performed a search for their executive director several months before that. And one of the stipulations with the retainer was that I join that board. So I ended up as a board member on the Tech Council. And as I'm, you know, off here on the side leading this project, it just made sense that it come under the Technology Council. And as we went further, we realized that this work, it is extremely important that this work is treated as Sweden. It's neutral. It can't be aligned specifically, shouldn't be aligned specifically with any one university or one anything. It should be something that is shared and a shared leadership across the ecosystem to make it healthy and thriving. So the Tech Council was a perfect spot.
You use the word serendipity. I'm going to jump right into the theoretical for a second. What is the role of serendipity in ecosystem building?
Oh, that is a huge area of opportunity. And it just happens. The more you're out there, the more you're talking to people, one thing leads to another. And you can call it woo-woo, but I'm really into things happen when they're supposed to and how they're supposed to. And the stars just start to align and you start to feel this, oh my God, this was meant to be. This is just a phenomenal thing. So I think serendipity is huge. And that's why it's so important to have environments and communities where collisions are encouraged, like the coffee shops and the green spaces and the co-working spaces and such. It's a very big underlying, probably immeasurable, important resource.
Yeah. So we kind of cut into your story, and I definitely want to hear how that has led you into the roles you're in today. Because I know that you not only have a role with the EBLP, but you also are an ambassador for Right to Start, which is another organization that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, you know, fast forwarding here, when we found out all of this information about our community and we realized we had a whole lot of work to do collectively, we asked the traditional economic development organizations, said, hey, this really needs to happen. Whose niche is this or should it be? How can we support you taking on this work? And there wasn't any organization or individual that had the capacity at the time or the charge. So we were put in the position of, okay, we just go home, put it on the shelf, and it was a nice try, or let's figure out how to get this done. So we decided to figure out how to get it done. And we came at it as we're going to work ourselves out of a job within 3 years. So we're going to convince the community within 3 years that what entrepreneurship is, why it's important, and get it resourced and move this function that we are creating into a traditional sustained economic development organization that has the resources that are needed. So we were lucky enough to align with one of our top philanthropists in the community who was very interested in supporting this plan. And he pretty much individually funded us for those 3 years. We had a few other great contributors, but this, you know, he was at the level of $250,000 a year for 3 years. What we did with that money was do what seems impossible if you think about it for a minute and change the culture of a community. How do you do that? Our culture was identified to be extremely complacent and risk averse. So we worked hard. I mean, we had stood up the 501c3. I was starting to get paid in 2015 now to be the director. And our board of directors was a group of super, super smart folks with, again, the right feelings and ethics around what the community needs and how they could support that. So we came up with a great strategy, and it actually ends up fast forward in the ESHIP goals being around goal number 6, which is universal support. We put together an awareness campaign much smaller scale, but on the, as you know, kind of like if you remember, or if you're old enough to remember the commercials about This Is Your Brain on Drugs or Got Milk or the tobacco cessation programs. It was like that. We spent a lot of resources and time on educating the community and the leaders and having events and trainings and advertising and billboards and all of that. And it was working. I mean, people were getting super excited about the possibilities. And not unlike a lot of other communities, now this thing had legs. And the leaders that originally didn't have the capacity now were becoming more and more uncomfortable. And I hope you don't, I hope listeners don't ever have to go through an experience like this, but people will do really crazy things when they feel like their comfortable situations might be upended. And to be honest, all the way through, we were very open and constantly inviting people to come and engage and be a part. And I still continue to this day to try to think about, could we have done better things, figured out how to build more trust or help people feel like this was a shared ownership kind of thing. And hindsight's always 20/20, but it ultimately in 2019, we ran out of funds after 5 years, and the city and county governments were extremely supportive of the project and very disappointed to see what had happened and tried to figure out how to fund it to build a sustainability plan outside of the organization that was originally going to absorb it. But long story short, it died in late October, early November 2019. So as you can imagine, that was devastating, but I continued throughout that work. I was engaged across the country and got introduced to the Kauffman Foundation and the eShip summits. So I was lucky enough to be able to attend those in Kansas City and get engaged in the network that is just amazing. It's just a lot of folks that are out here in the ecosystem building roles are the only person in their community doing this. And many times, like it was for us, you were pushing the boulder up a very steep mountain. But to come into a room full of 1,500 or 2,000 people that are doing and feeling the same things was just cathartic. It was really fantastic. So, you know, aligning it with my work, for me to participate and meet these people and learn from what they're doing was professional development for me. And it was very therapeutic at the same time. So very grateful for that. And once the things kind of fell apart in 2019, I still had that network and I still had activities happening, maybe informally, around entrepreneurship ecosystem building across the country and trying to solve for what a lot of communities need to avoid what happened here and to help organizations and communities across the country finally embrace ecosystem building as a new solution to what so many small to mid-sized markets are experiencing and have experienced for decades. And now since the pandemic, even more so, there's a sense of urgency in this space.
Could you talk more about that sense of urgency?
So through the eShip summits, you know, we were able to gain insights from those 1,500, 2,000 folks each year. And in between, there were always meetings and different calls that we would come together on to create these like sustainable development goals that are of the eShip summits. And there are 7 of those. And we worked as teams on a volunteer basis to try to move these things forward, all knowing that we really, really need collective support. And all of those inputs culminated into the need for a network or an entity or an action that will support the network of entrepreneurship ecosystem building across the United States as a whole, that will do things that no one organization or individual that's in ecosystem building could achieve on their own. So the sense of urgency came more from, you know, we knew what was needed at the last summit. We came together and said, yeah, we need to do this. We need to figure out how to do it. There was a core team of folks that kept meeting over the next year or so. And finally, you know, that we're starting to come out of the pandemic and all the indicators, the research that Kauffman is doing and Brookings and others across the country shows this intense, immense increase in urgency for more entrepreneurship and more entrepreneurial activity, thinking and acting across the country, less complacency, et cetera. So the International Business Innovation Association, NBIA, stepped up and worked with Kaufman, developed an application, and became the host of the EBLP on behalf of the field of entrepreneurship ecosystem building, so we can indeed advance the field in meaningful ways over the next several years, hopefully forever.
How do you define ecosystem building succinctly if you meet someone in an elevator?
We're people that really think from a big picture perspective, from a systems perspective, and we look at the big picture and we understand the whole is greater than the sum of all the parts. I think it's just a natural thing for folks like us to connect each other, connect opportunities, connect projects, connect things that are relevant to help people move to their next step of success, whether that's an entrepreneur, whether it's a professional in their career, whether it's mentoring of a child. It's just naturally wanting to help and support and being out there and being open to those serendipitous messages that are coming at you. This is not an elevator speech.
It's a really tall building. It's okay.
Yeah. But it's systems thinkers really coming together and working towards helping others be more successful.
Can you talk to us about Right to Start?
Sure. So Victor Huang, who was most recently the Vice President of Entrepreneurship at Kaufman, recognized this need for policy change across the country to, again, align with Goal 6 and 7 with the eShip Summit goals, so that the barriers are reduced or eliminated to helping people that have an idea be able to implement them and be supported. There's a lot going on across the country. There's a Right to Start Act that's being moving down the pike within a lot of different states to come to fruition. And changes that are being looked at are things like streamlining of permitting, eliminating the non-competition rules that some companies have in place, so that if I'm an engineer in an aerospace company and I have a great idea that I want to go develop, I can't work in that space for a year after I leave the company. So that definitely puts a hold on somebody's entrepreneurial journey for quite some time. There are other things too, several other things that you can look at Right to Start webpage and sign up to get the updates. There's a ton going on. They're hiring more advocates across the different states. And there's a lot of progress being made in a short amount of time.
Thank you.
So thinking about the EBLP, and as someone who serendipitously found it and got into it, I think there's multiple levels of value creation that you have kind of guided the ship on. One of those, I think, is the platform. I've been a member of a lot of different platforms, and sometimes you log in once and then you never log in again. But you all have created this platform where I feel like I have a place to go to ask questions when I want to learn about a new metric for an ecosystem. I want to get connected to different ways to think about the work that we're doing. And people respond really quickly, and big names respond really quickly. And so, like, could you talk a bit more about the intentionality that went into that?
We did a research around the different platforms that we could possibly use. And we did a lot of conversations around the importance of engagement. But I can't take credit for the fact that it's working so well. It's truly the quality of the folks that are part of this. Every member that is enlisted on TradeWing is caring and knowledgeable and passionate about moving this field forward. So that's the magic. And I certainly am working hard to make sure that this network continues to move forward and advance the field, but I'm one of several. One of the most important things about this whole project is the notion of shared leadership, and that everyone that's a part of this project feels some sort of ownership of its success. And I'm constantly thinking about that and wondering, you know, what more can we do to help folks feel that this is theirs and it's all of ours to shape and provide what we need collectively.
I personally feel like y'all have done a great job of that.
Thank you.
So how do you do it?
Well, and I think I'll give an example, right? We have a community hub through Startup Space, and I'll have to be honest, we've struggled to get a lot of engagement. It does seem to be picking up more recently, but I would love to have what you have on TradeWing within our internal ecosystem here.
Interesting. I think it all comes back to your audience and how you can raise awareness of the importance and the need for that. Maybe some resources do need to be applied to some outreach and marketing Or, you know, one of the things that was most successful when we were doing our awareness campaign was having the entrepreneurs themselves sit down and talk on camera about what they're doing and how the ecosystem is helping them. And to be honest, if you get any of those videos, we'd love to have them and post them on TradeWing, because that's the real holy grail of this work. Is we are here specifically as entrepreneurship ecosystem builders to help each and every entrepreneur either one, fail really fast before they mortgage their house and lose a lot of money if they've got a failing project, or get the resources they need to scale really quickly and enjoy all the great outcomes personally for the entrepreneur, but also ultimately for our communities and our country.
So I think a second layer of that network for me is that people will go out of their way to help me with things in my own ecosystem. So I have like multiple examples of posing a question. Someone who lives across the world then connected me with someone in my part of the world. And now these new emergent projects are sprouting out of it to give our entrepreneurs access to more capital, right? So that's like an incredibly serendipitous thing that was created through this network. That's a huge value add.
Absolutely. And there are countless things going on like that because of this work and because of any ecosystem builder's work. And how do you measure that? It's very difficult because, you know, I'll meet someone that I may have spoken to 5 years ago or been a part of a panel or something, and they'll tell me I changed their life. And it's like, how do you really track this stuff effectively? I don't think you can. It's just something that we know is happening and we appreciate very much.
Is that a good segue to social capital?
Yeah, I want to hear more about the social capital business that you started.
That is a repository for side projects, but it the name and my work just aligns with who I am. And that's an ecosystem builder looking to impact other people's lives, knowing that mine gets enriched every time I do that. There was an article that some statistician wrote years ago, and I kick myself every time I remember it because I don't know where I put it. But he measured social capital worth against financial wealth, and the social capital won out hands down. I don't know if you know Adam Grant and some of the books that he's written, The Originals or Give and Take, though that speaks to that type of situation as well. The more people you help, the more successful you're going to be in life. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, one of the books or chapters of a book I assigned to my college students is Richard Putnam's Bowling Alone, about the social fragmentation of America and, like, you know, what is our role as citizens to kind of bridge these gaps? And I think that right to start figure that 94% of Americans support small business, that like gave me a little bit of calm with all of the, you know, political polarization. I was like, well, this is great. This is something we can work on together.
Absolutely.
So what do you think then is the role of targeted social capital within entrepreneurial networks?
It might sound kind of flippant, but it's the ecosystem building, you know, and when they see and experience the support and are helped to succeed based on that support, they talk about it, it moves forward, and they pay it forward in connecting other entrepreneurs to the opportunities or providing input to us that says, you know, this is missing. I sure wish this would have been available back when we got started, kind of thing. You know, it's a snowball effect.
As the ecosystem does start to, I guess, build and flow and evolve, it becomes a flywheel. So there's just more momentum. And how do you kind of manage that? There's a lot of emotions and personalities that play into all of the relationships that we manage. What would you say to a newer ecosystem builder who is learning as they go?
Trust building is number one. Really, and building these relationships and making sure that you're listening versus trying to think of your answer before the person has finished asking the question. But it's one relationship at a time. Like you said, Lauren, it's everyone. There's different personalities everywhere, but asking questions and listening and doing what you can. And, you know, the worst thing somebody can do is give you a solution that isn't right. And wasting an entrepreneur's time is one of our biggest mistakes that we could possibly make. So if you don't know the answer, commit to going to find the answer or working with them to try to find the answer.
How much of your time do you spend working directly with entrepreneurs versus working with other resource providers and kind of keeping that alignment? What do you think is a good balance?
I'm going to answer as it was, because now I'm not. I'm fully focused on the EBLP currently. But back when, the more time I could spend with the entrepreneurs, the better for my sanity, as well as just to be more effective, right? We get feedback from entrepreneurs to go back to resource providers to say, hey, this is what we're hearing. We do surveys and such, but really just sitting down over a cup of coffee with an entrepreneur and acting as a kind of an accountability coach, asking the stupid questions that the marketplace might ask that they're not thinking of it because they're too deep into their project, is really, really helpful. And again, it gives us some flags as far as what resources gaps might we be experiencing and need to collectively fill across the ecosystem.
So now with your role, and now that EVLP has been going for a while, what do you think is the future of the field? And what are some takeaways from that collective of knowledge that you've garnered so far?
Ooh.
Sorry, dropping the big one.
Oh, the future of the field is very, very bright. The term ecosystem is popping up everywhere, and I don't imagine that everyone's thinking of the term in the same way, 100%, but the federal government is using the word ecosystem in their publications and in their grant opportunities and such. The SBA has a director of ecosystem development. The community navigator programs that are out there through the Small Business Administration are definitely ecosystem building navigation pilots that hopefully will be continued. And I've never seen more alignment. I'm not the wizard that's been around here for 100 years, but it's been a decade. And the alignment around what's needed to happen to move our economy forward, I've never seen it as strong as it is right now. And the more the network progresses, the more that's going to become apparent. And I envision economic development becoming much more focused on ecosystem building, not just entrepreneurship ecosystem building, which is what we're focused on and needs the most help most urgently. But over time, all of economic development, I see really taking a systems approach to these things and becoming more efficient and effective that way by working collectively, truly working collectively. The difficulty that comes for communities when things happen, like happened to my organization or my efforts, is that you think when somebody's in a community development or economic development role, their passion and their number one goal is to move that community or environment forward. A lot of times it's not the case. I guess it's human nature, and I can't fault anyone. Their number one is taking care of me and mine, and being able to regularly take yourself out of that space, the me and mine, and come back and say, what's the big picture? How can we make this better together? That's just so important. And how we can get more communities in that mind space, I'm not sure we're there, but slowly but surely through this work, I think it's going to happen. Maybe not in my lifetime, but we're getting there, I think.
With all of the knowledge creation that the work groups have created and then the action teams from the in-person convening, what are like the top takeaways of kind of new directions or new ideas that have come out to progress the field?
You know, from the past eShip work and the eShip summits and all the initiatives that came out of that, the same needs still exist today, and that there are a lot of folks that were engaged in the eShip summits that are still engaged and excited about this work. And almost more excitingly, though, there are a whole bunch of new people, and we are all of a similar mindset, and we want to do whatever we can to help advance the field. The coming out of Indianapolis and the strategic doing projects that were identified, there were so many that were overlapping. It's really interesting, but again, it's an indicator that we're all headed in the same direction, and we all have a good feel for what the field needs today to advance it to the next, and we can work together collectively again to find out what it needs after these projects advance the field. So specific tangible takeaways are that, you know, we went through a process to elect a provisional council, and it was through internal, you know, two EBLP folks were able to nominate each other, and then they voted unanimously to choose who would be on the provisional council. And it came out really, really interestingly, and I think very well, not myself included, but I'm very proud and great confidence builder that I'm included in that list. But we have people from all across the country. I mean, the diversity of the group is great, and the outreach that we'll be able to have across the network and bringing more people into the network is really going to be impactful. We're meeting for the first time in person here within the next couple of weeks and to scope out our work and come back to the network and share and get more input and feedback. That's one tangible outcome that I think is great.
One, I want to say congratulations, because it sounds like there's been major milestones achieved through the project so far. So
thank you.
For those who aren't familiar with strategic doing, so it keeps coming up over and over. I have the book. I have started a course, I think actually twice. Jacob, I don't know if you know that, but eventually I would like to go experience it in a formal training environment. But for those who aren't familiar, could you kind of give a summary and maybe like an example project?
Sure. So, and I'm no expert. This was the first time I ever experienced strategic doing myself. The facilitators, the great facilitators from Agile Strategy Labs, carried us through the projects very well and throughout all of the work of the project since last spring. But coming into a strategic doing project, apparently the most important things are the framing questions that you get when you come in. And you're asked not to come in with any preconceived ideas. So the framing questions, and I'm not sure I know them by heart, for this program were: imagine the field of entrepreneurship ecosystem building is mainstream and widely supported. What does that look like? And then three teams came together and focused on that same question separately. And there were teams of like 3 to 6 people. And then the second question was around, what if there was a very impactful and efficient learning infrastructure across the country for entrepreneurship ecosystem builders? What would that look like? Again, three teams come up with three ideas. And then the last one is, imagine entrepreneurship ecosystem building is adequately resourced and sustained and resilient. What does that look like? Three teams again. So we ended up with 9 proposed projects that came out. And I think I said earlier, a bunch of them really, really overlap and are interdependent on each other and complementary. And there's also the risk of duplicative work. So I'm working now to try to coordinate across all 9 teams and say, hey, did you know teams 3A is very similar to your work 3C? Maybe you guys should talk. And some teams are combining already. So it's great.
That's so diplomatic. That speaks to the process, I guess, if it gets people out of their silos and working across organizations.
Yeah, and you start out talking about, you know, what assets do you bring to the table that support the solution to that question? And it was neat to learn from the people around the table all of the different things that they had access to or expertise that they could provide. And it works really quickly. I mean, we came out with these 9 projects in a day and a half.
Is there a necessary element of newness to the network? Like if you were to continue doing or to begin and then continue strategic doing with the, you know, same 10 people for 3 years, it seems like, what assets do you bring to the table? You have to continually be perhaps growing your individual networks so that that asset list gets refreshed.
Yeah, that's interesting perspective. And I think probably it works where different projects come up and different people are able to get engaged. Like it was heart-wrenching that Jacob couldn't make it to Indianapolis, right? But the next one, hopefully he can participate in, and the framing questions will be different maybe. But what happens now after the strategic doing, you know, in-person identifying the projects, everyone comes together with what they call their 30-30. And so in 30 days, you had at that Indianapolis, you had committed to certain things that you were going to accomplish by a certain date. So 30 days after that first convening, we meet with our teams, talk about our progress, our lack of progress, and readjust our direction as is necessary, as we agree upon. And then we schedule our next 30-30 and we keep moving along. They're designed to be, I think, 90 to 180 days long, the projects. I think most of ours are expected to be come to fruition within the first 90 days. And they're not necessarily solving for what's going to advance the field, but they're going to be great indicators of what would solve for. So, for example, one of the projects is about researching the opportunity for blending and braiding funding to support the sustainability of entrepreneurship ecosystem building. So that team is identifying a minimum of 30 funders that they're aware of that are serving and investing in entrepreneurship in some way, shape, or form. And we're interviewing them. And we'll have the outcomes from those interviews collectively in the middle of November, And then we will write a proof of concept paper by the middle of December, providing the inputs that we got from those funders. So what that does is obviously gives us a clue as what we need to do to get appropriate funding, but also it's customer discovery. We have at least 30 customers to go back to and say, okay, this is what we've done. How should we tweak it? And do you want to work with us to move this thing forward? So,
are they looking for federal funders, state funders, local funders, private funders, all the above?
Yeah, of course.
We know a couple of good ones in Virginia.
Yeah, I did a story on Danville with Ava. Is it Ava Doss?
Ava Doss and I think Jessica Edwards and Diana Schwartz. Yeah, there's a great team.
Awesome. Yeah, I interviewed Ava and the founding community foundation board president that was there when they all came together at the beginning. It was such a great story. Really good story. Great example to set for the rest of the country. You know, those were one of the most important things that will happen out of this network is the stories that we can help amplify, like Danville, like Detroit, like. And the more that we can amplify these stories, the more people realize it's a no-brainer. We got to do this work.
What do you see as different or unique challenges for rural areas? A lot of the localities that we work with are smaller than Danville. So, you know, the kind of space between Danville and going over to Brunswick County, which is just before you get to Emporia, Greensville area. So, and then up to Farmville, of course, where Jacob is at Longwood.
Yeah, it's interesting with rural, with the pandemic, it's even more of an exclamation point, right? That e-commerce is super, super important for those folks. And the now mainstream acceptance of meeting virtually, there's a lot more opportunity, I think, for broader regional ecosystems to be able to collaborate across bigger swaths of land. And I've not worked specifically in a rural area. I know E2 Ecosystems with Don Mackey has been very focused on rural best practices or proven practices. And he's got a lot of tools that are available for free around rural ecosystem, entrepreneurship ecosystem building. But the struggles in rural are different because because of the geographical spaces and the resources that a larger city would have aren't necessarily there. But can there be some kind of a connection with the rural and the not so rural so that those opportunities maybe can be expanded? I don't know. It's a big deal. It's the worst thing to drive through a town that used to be thriving and see that it's just, there's a lot of boarded up places and not a lot of energy happening, which is way too big and too much of that is out there, I'm sure.
Well, I think we have approached the time in our conversation where we have a series of rapid fire questions. This first one, I don't even think we have to ask, but I'll ask it because we go through this list. But do you consider yourself an ecosystem builder?
Yes, I do. It can be anything but.
So second one is, as we all know, this work is hard and it's exhausting. Do you have any daily habits or routines that you would recommend to others for finding balance in this work?
I wake up every morning saying to myself, this is going to be an amazing day and a really great serendipity is going to happen. And it does. And do I work out and do I do my breathing exercises and meditate? I try. I can't say I'm really consistent about it. I get most of my juice, though, from doing the work. It's a vocation more than it is a job.
Power of positive mindset is definitely key.
Sure is.
Is there a book or resource that you would recommend for entrepreneurs?
Startup Communities with Brad Feld is really good because the more entrepreneurs that we can get engaged in the ecosystem building work, the better off we're going to be. And I think Brad's books support those notions. Simon Sinek and the why. If you can't answer the reason why you're creating something, what it's a solution to what problem, then you might as well go find another idea because it's just, but his story about identifying your why and communicating that why is really helpful and good.
Awesome. Okay, so what is your favorite restaurant in your community and what would you recommend others get there?
There's a lot of favorite restaurants here. I'm going to say it would be what's called Bar, B-A-R Ronin, R-O-N-I-N. And they have this amazing melt in your mouth meat dish that is, oh my gosh, what's the name of it? Remember, it was like Kobe beef and now it's Wagyu.
Mm.
It was fantastic.
I was really impressed with the food scene in Pennsylvania when I lived in West Virginia. Like every time we went up to Pittsburgh or even north of that, like the food is so good.
And different. We have things here, you know, like chicken wings are super popular, but we have pepperoni balls and we have.
Yes. Sorry. I got really excited about that. I was telling my colleagues about those the other day.
And Smith's hot dogs here is very famous. People that move away have them shipped to them. They're really great. If you ever get a chance to have a Smith's hot dog, you got to take it.
All right. Last one. Who is someone, a thought leader or someone in the field of ecosystem building that you would recommend other people check out or follow?
I'm going to say, from my perspective, Charles Ross. He's the CEO of International Business Incubation Association, NBIA. He is an amazing leader. He's been engaged in this work at varying different perspectives for quite some time. And working directly with and for him over the past several months has been really amazing. He's one of those quiet servant leaders that is excellent at getting the point across. I don't know. He's just really a comforting soul to be around. And then others, of course, are Andy Stahl and Victor Huang. Victor doing with the Right to Start work that he's doing, the team that he's building around him, watching what they're doing on a regular basis is going to be great professional development for folks to just stay abreast of things that are happening. And Jeff Bennett and what he's done with Ecosystem Builder Hub. I don't know if you know him. He's been involved since eShip and was an eShip champ, being along with a few of us. And he's continued on this blog and writing series throughout the years. And he's just really committed and dedicated to it. So following him and following his stories is another high five for sure.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing all of that.
Where can our listeners find or connect with you or find out more about the organizations you work with?
Sure. So they can email me anytime at eblp.zimmer@gmail.com. And please go to TradeWing and sign up to be a member. You're not required to do a thing except sign up so that you can watch what's happening. And you have the opportunity, like Jacob said earlier, is you have the opportunity to provide insights and ask questions in there and provide ideas. And we just love to have you there. That you go to eblp.tradewing.com. There's no www or https, which I think is very strange. But if you try to type those things in, it doesn't work. So
great. Well, thank you so much for your time today and really excited to get this story and all of your knowledge out there.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Rise Collaborative podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your podcast app or share this episode on social media.
You can connect with us on LinkedIn. We'd love you to join the dialogue, get connected to the network, and learn more about Sober Eyes and the people and the places that we work. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next episode.